You are listening to the Wells Tech Podcast, where we talk about technology that can serve the church and its work of spreading the gospel. Wells Tech is a part of the Podcast Network on Streams, the internet media site sponsored by the Wisconsin Evangelical Lutheran Synod. Join the conversation by visiting our podcast website at wellstech.wells.net. You're listening to the Wells Tech Podcast for Wednesday, November 11th, 2009. This is episode 105, Learning Long Distance Style. It is time again for another edition of the Wells Tech Podcast. My name is Martin Spriggs. Serve as the Chief Technology Officer for the Wisconsin Synod. And joining me, as usual, Sally Draper. Good morning, Sally.
Good morning, Martin, and happy Veterans Day. This show will be airing on November 11th, which is Veterans Day here in America. Mm-hmm. And I have special veteran to say hello to this morning. That's my dad. He was in World War II and the Korean conflict. Do you have any veterans in your family tree?
My dad, who's passed away, was in World War II. So he was actually very quiet about his experiences in World War II. He was in the Army, and I know was over in Africa for a while and saw quite a bit of action in the artillery. How about your dad?
Yeah, he actually served in Germany toward the end of the war, and he ended up pretty sick and spent a lot of time in the medical area. Mm-hmm. And then he said they came back and everybody was so euphoric after the World War II victory that he signed up for the National Guard to help a buddy out and then got pulled into the Korean conflict. Mm-hmm. But he stayed stateside in Korea. So.
Right.
Interesting
stories. We certainly do. Absolutely. We take that for granted too often, don't we?
Yeah.
All right. Our topic for the day, and this is an annual event, is distance learning. This happens to be, is it this week, National Distance Learning Week?
It is National Distance Learning Week. It's an initiative sponsored by the United States Distance Learning Association. Mm-hmm. And they have a website, ndlw.org, where you can learn more about their initiative. But basically, they just want to draw attention to the tremendous growth and accomplishments in distance learning. And it's in all aspects of our lives, certainly in education. Over 700,000 high school students are taking one or more courses online, and over 3.5 million college students are. So certainly a growing segment in education, but not just in education, in business and in government as well. And we hope we can also use it to further the gospel message and the work of the church.
And that's really what we are interested in on this show, is how there is where there is intersection between distance learning and ministry. So maybe we probably should define our terms first, Sally. When we say distance learning, that can mean a lot of different things, and maybe that's evolved even since the last time we talked about it.
Sure, I think it has as we have more and more tools to work with, but basically distance learning would be anything that you can do remotely as opposed to being in a face-to-face classroom situation. And that may be the entire coursework, or it may be just a segment of the coursework that you do either online. In the old days, Martin and I even took correspondence courses. That was the distance learning of yesterday.
Yep.
But you know, today with the internet and all the Web 2.0 tools at our disposal, basically being able to connect and experience education long distance.
Yep. My wife is currently in a class offered by Martin Luther College on reading disabilities. She's a teacher and is taking a class totally online. And the instructor is an adjunct professor from, I believe, UW-La Crosse, but is actually on sabbatical in New Mexico. And then there are many students from all over the United States and even in Antigua that are in this particular class. They do the class through the use of discussion boards, assignments that are posted online. She had to do a video assessment of a student, so she videotaped herself doing this reading assessment with a student, and we actually posted it on Vimeo. for the instructor to review and grade. So using all kinds of different aspects of distance learning, and that's kind of the challenge and also the fun of it, is you've got a lot of tools at your disposal. And National Distance Learning Week really highlights the uses for each of those tools.
Absolutely. I think one of the great resources I stumbled across as I was doing research for this show is a FAQ, or Frequently Asked Questions list, from Martin Luther College, put together by our distance learning coordinator, Professor Jim Grunwall. And one of the questions he asked is, how do online classes compare to face-to-face
right.
courses?
Great
and
question.
I think that's probably something that a lot of people struggle with. Am I going to be able to do this? How is it different? It's a brand new world for me to consider. Consider taking an online class. And I think in a lot of ways they're very similar. I mean, you just described your wife's experience, and all those kind of things that she's putting into the course at a distance would be the same things she would be required to do in a face-to-face class. Maybe, you know, you need a little bit more computer savvy. You need to be able to get into discussion boards and things and understand the syntax of how things are laid out. Pretty common skills these days, though, because we use that in a lot of different ways. One thing that I was explaining just this week to my son, who was talking about distance learning opportunities, is sometimes the time commitment can maybe even be a little bit more than a face-to-face class, because
right.
you aren't quite sure. You don't have an instructor right there saying, oh, you can ignore this part of it. We aren't going to focus on that. We're
right.
going to, you know, put all our efforts into this area. So you pretty much have to take all the content at face value and study and learn and, you know, put equal emphasis on everything that's a part of the course content. So that can, you know, turn into potentially a little bit more of a time commitment. But I think people that are good at face-to-face classes are probably going to be good at online classes as well, because
mm-hmm.
they probably have those reading comprehension skills and those kind of things that make studying simpler for some.
Yeah, there needs to be an amount of self-discipline for an effective learning experience, I would think. I've taken many. I got most of my MBA through distance learning classes, you know, night school types of things. This is back in around 2000 even. But I found that I actually learned more through the distance learning class than the face-to-face classes, because I was forced to, again, like you said, take everything at face value, read every chapter of the textbook, and because you're never quite sure what's going to come in handy. And there's some value in that, where you're really saying, I need to get real comfortable with this material.
That's right. You know, one of the huge advantages is you can do that at 3 a.m.
Mm-hmm.
if you so desire. If that's when you're self-motivated and you know, have the highest level of reading comprehension, the course is available basically 24/7. So a lot of flexibility built into it, but you've got to have that desire and that motivation to really dig into the content yourself. There's no, you know, Monday, Wednesday, Friday schedule to comply with to kind of keep you on track. You set the schedule yourself.
Right. So we've got some examples that we can share with folks, right?
That's right. You know, one of the things we wanted to do was highlight all the Wells opportunities that are available for distance learning. And we've organized a website. You can get to it at bit.ly/WellsNDLW for National Distance Learning Week. And we'll have that link in the show notes. But basically, we organized a lot of different Wells opportunities into three categories. We have a Bible study category, we have MLC courses with links into the MLC website, and then we have ministry resources, those things that will be useful for bringing your staff or your volunteers up to speed on various aspects of ministry. And just wanted to highlight a few of those, especially under the Bible study category. We have a brand new series of Bible study developed by our What About Jesus office, and it's called Great Chapters of the Bible, where they've put together resources around, I believe, 9 different chapters in the Bible that have particular interest to many, starting with Romans 8 and Victory in Christ. They have Hebrews 11, the Great Faith chapter, and many others. And for each of those, you can read the content online. They have a series of questions and answers to help you dig deeper into the content of each of those great chapters of the Bible. And that one's pretty much brand new. So if you haven't been out to check out our Bible Bible study resources recently, you may not have seen the great chapters of the Bible, and that's one that you'll want to dig into, I'm sure.
And how do they get there?
Well, we have a link off our National Distance Learning webpage, but you can also get to it on our Wells.net University site. It's available in the Bible study category there, and that's at Wells.net/university.
Okay, great. Yeah, I'm looking forward to that. Is there a way to enroll, or do you just go and review or use the content?
Actually, that one does require a Wells.net University account. So as you navigate to the website, you'll be prompted to create a username and password. Or if you already have a Wells.net University account, then you're just enrolled in the course.
Mm-hmm. And that's using the Moodle software that we've talked about many times in the past, right?
That's correct. And we have other Bible studies out there as well. There's one on the entire book of John that you enroll in the exact same way, and you can go chapter by chapter through the book of John.
Very good. And Moodle is open source software that we've talked about before. It offers almost any kind of distance learning tool that's available on most platforms, including quizzes. Well, you probably have a longer list than I do, Sally, but you can have a syllabus, you can have quizzes, you can have assignments, discussion boards. Is there chat available within Moodle as well?
There is chat.
Right.
And, yeah, lots of interaction available there.
Plus a whole grade book if you want to use that portion.
Right. And if you sign up for any of those Martin Luther College courses, that's what you'll be using there as well. And they have a sample course to kind of get you oriented to the Moodle environment if you're new at taking online classes at Martin Luther College. They offer graduate, undergraduate, and even some high school level courses where high schoolers can get college credit while still in high school. So lots of opportunities there at Martin Luther College.
Yep. And then as we talked about at the top of the show, things are changing, and Web 2.0 or Web 3.0 or whatever you want to call it brings new components into play, and that's good for distance learning because some of these are very collaborative, distance learning friendly kinds of tools. The one that obviously immediately comes to mind is the use of VoIP technology like Skype, which we're using to record this podcast, where you can not just hear each other but see each other, right?
That's right. And, you know, I'm thinking about potentially a pastor trying to do a long-distance Bible information class. Maybe he has members, but he can't always visit them,
right,
or they can't always come in for class. And with Skype, you have, you know, the capability of doing video as well as audio. So you could certainly make a really good connection for going over your class materials and things like that. Maybe do some desktop sharing mm-hmm. with Vue software so that the pastor could maybe share a presentation or something like that long distance as well.
Sure. Yep.
And, you know, not just long distance, but there's plenty of busy people that probably would appreciate an online component, even if it's an offshoot of a regular Bible class that you have face-to-face, having some online discussions through a discussion board or specific wiki or whatever could also be a very positive addition to your ministry.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, one thing that we talked about last week when we were talking about digital Bible study was maybe the wisdom of recording either audio or video, some of your face-to-face classes that could be shared with those who couldn't be there with you. So with the tools that are available today and the low cost of, let's say, video cameras, you can get a decent video camera for, you know, under $200 at this point, and then free services like Vimeo that you could actually post these on, there's really not a lot of barriers between you and your content and getting that available to those people who might want to view that.
Yep. One more mention of a video resource, not just your generated video resources, but Wells has a lot of great video series as well, and you'll find links to those on our National Distance Learning Week website as well.
Great.
But one that we've been taking advantage of here in Sleepy Eye is the video series Every Day, which is an extensive set of devotions kind of geared toward high school, college age teens, but potentially useful at all ages.
Mm-hmm.
and really, really well done and a great addition. Maybe you want to incorporate them into your regular Bible class or into a distance learning Bible scenario where you can pull in these videos and ask for commentary or discussion around them.
Yeah, as I recall, they're short, you know, 2 to 3 minute clips, right?
That's right, mm-hmm. and cover just a wide variety of Bible topics.
Timely topics, absolutely.
For
yeah,
sure.
Nicely done. Good call.
And that's just one. There's a lot of video series out there, so make sure you check out the website if you're looking for video resources as well.
Okay, very good. So National Distance Learning Week, again, that URL that we've put together is bit.ly/Wells. NDLW for National Distance Learning Week. So you can go right to the page there on Wells.net University and find all that good stuff. Thanks, yep. Sally. Lots of homework on this one, and certainly something that we need to be taking more advantage of with the technology that makes it so easy to do. Let's move on. We have a nice interview this week. We, as I mentioned last week, I was at the Wisconsin State Teachers Conference, and I had the opportunity to sit down with one of the teachers there who was presenting, Carl Henslin, who was at St. Mark in Green Bay, and he was good enough to spend a couple minutes with me talking about his presentation, which was free Windows software. We're always interested in free things, and we're also interested in things that make our lives easier. And that's one of the things that Carl highlighted in my interview with him, is just a way, if anybody is responsible for maintaining computers in, well, probably any context, but especially in educational context, there's free stuff out there to help you do that. So let's listen to my interview with Carl Henslin. I'm here at the Wisconsin Lutheran State Teachers Conference in Milwaukee, Wisconsin, at Wisconsin Lutheran High School, and great to have Carl Henslin, teacher at St. Mark Lutheran in Green Bay, Wisconsin. Thanks for joining.
Thanks for having me.
Now, Carl, you were a presenter here on something called free software for Windows. Is that something that you've had a lot of experience with in your current position? Maybe tell us a little bit about your position at St. Mark, what you do there, and then how you got into finding the good stuff on Windows.
Sure. Right now I teach fourth grade. That's my primary responsibility. I also teach sixth grade computer, and I'm in charge of a lot of the computer maintenance. So a lot of my presentation was actually about how to maintain your computers in less time.
So when you're talking about computer maintenance, you're talking about programs that you could install and keep everything, you know, kind of clean and tidy, or is it just more common sense housekeeping type tips?
Well, a lot of my presentation is about just one piece of software. It's iTalc. It's spelled I-T-A-L-C. And it's a network management piece of software that allows you to run commands on all your computers at the same time. So you don't have to walk around your computer lab and then run defrag on every single machine. You can just do it once on all of them. And it also allows you to monitor your students, what they're doing at the same time. You can see all their screens, and it's a free piece of software.
So this has kind of saved you essentially administrative time in trying to keep everything up to speed from an administrator's perspective. And then does this allow you to install applications across the lab itself?
It does. I can install a new piece of software using that on all the machines at the same time. And I can also use it to tell what the students are doing. So it's a very versatile application.
How many computers do you manage?
In the whole school, probably about 65 computers. We have 27 in the computer lab. And those are the ones that we spend the most time on.
And I assume these are all, this is a Windows application, so these are Windows computers?
All of them are Windows. We also run a domain server. We run Windows Server 2003 on that one. And that is great too, but it's not free.
So how did you find out about this?
That is a good question. another teacher at my school, Joel Fenske, learned about it from Manitowoc Lutheran, I think it was. So it's been passed down the chain. It's probably been on the podcast before, I suppose.
No, I don't remember that, so I think that's a great tip. Our listeners might be interested in that. And you say it's totally free. Is it essentially open source then?
No, I believe it's developed by pretty much one person, actually. So he probably accepts donations, but he does give it away for free.
Okay. And did you talk about anything else in your workshop? Where did that kind of branch off into conversations about maybe good programs that should be in our schools?
Yeah, another one that I think is a really major piece of software is GCompri, which is GCompris. And that is a piece of software that I think is perfect for pre-K through third grade. It is free, but about half of the software you have to pay to get the rest of it. It's very reasonable. For us to install it on 27 computers was only $160. And then it has 107 different applications. Excellent administrative value to it. You can tell the kids to open it up, and you can tell it to have different options when they open it next time. For instance, if you're a Spanish teacher, you could have it tell them, load it up in Spanish next time, and you're going to have to click on stuff in a different language so that you have to learn Spanish as you use the program.
So does this and the TALC program do a total reinstall at your command as well? So if you've got a system that just really needs an overhaul, can you do that remotely, or do you have to be at the machine to do that?
iTalc would not do that. We did find some free software that we did clone all of our PCs from, so we could go back to an original image similar to what Norton Ghost would do. But I can't recall its name right now. I'm sorry.
Did you come to St. Mark with this, kind of this experience and this knowledge, or did you kind of learn on the job like a lot of our Wells teachers do?
Yeah. I've been a computer nerd for a really long time, so I've had some of this knowledge for a while, but I do spend a fair amount of my out-of-school time researching and searching around. Our first-grade teacher was one of the ones who was really inspirational in convincing me that we had to find more software for the computer lab for younger kids to use, and it's just so expensive to look for. Like if we wanted to get Math Blaster or something like that, it's usually $600 or $800 for a site license, so we couldn't afford that.
So do you have any plans coming up to do some upgrades, or what's kind of next on the technology plan there at St. Mark?
Well, we just recently actually rolled out Google Apps for our school and church, and that's a pretty huge deal. So we're still seeing how that's going, but it looks like the email and everything is going really well. And this last week, I think we've got calendars now working from Blackberries, iPhones, Macintosh, PC, everything. So it seems to be going really well. And our next thing we're hoping for is new teacher computers, because those are getting really old.
Okay, that's a challenge. Now, it's interesting that I think a lot of schools are considering Google Apps at this point. Is this something that every student then is going to have an account as well? And I'm assuming you have K-8 there. How low down do you go?
That's a good question. Right now, we decided to do just staff. I created one student account for 6th grade and one for 4th grade. So we're not making very much use of the program at all in comparison to what we could be. And it'd be great to do a lot more. Most of our value we'd probably see in it would be for 4th grade and up, because that's when we start typing a lot of final drafts. So it'd be really nice if we could do that at home and at school seamlessly, which right now is a big challenge with USB drives getting left around, or we don't have any floppy drives anymore. But a lot of people either have Open Office or Notepad or something at home, so the challenge is to make sure it'll still open in every location, which Google Docs or apps would really help out with.
Now, did you move away from something? Was there something, some centralized system that you were using for email that you moved to this, or this is kind of your first foray into providing email and collaborative document facilities for the staff.
This is definitely much bigger and better than what we had before. We had email addresses for everyone, and it was through our domain provider, which happens to be Bluehost. But we had a lot of trouble with it, and so far with Gmail or Google Apps, we've had no spam, basically, and we've not had lost emails like we were having before. We kept having problems that we'd get email return from AT&T or SBC Global, so our mailing lists were constantly coming back to us. Since we've upgraded to Google Apps, it's been really smooth.
How has the faculty adopted this? Are they looking forward to using it? Are they kind of going along with it, wait and see? What's been their attitude?
I think they were pretty looking forward to this due to the fact that our old email was so terrible. It seemed like almost every week for the last month before we had upgraded that it would just go out for a day or something. So everyone was so eager that they were very willing. We did have an hour scheduled for staff development with the school staff so I could show them how archiving worked as opposed to deleting old messages like you'd usually do. And I think that's been very helpful. That's a very powerful tool. The church staff really has had no training at all, and they've been able to pick it up. So it's a pretty easy-to-use application, I'd say.
How much of your time do you spend in the management of the technology? Because you also teach class, I assume. Right. So this is not your full-time job. Is that sometimes a challenge to kind of balance those?
Yeah, I have 50 minutes a week release time to do all the technology stuff, and it probably takes more like an hour a day. So it is a challenge. I administer a lot of websites for our church and school too. But because it's a passion of mine, I've never had trouble finding time for it.
Very good. Well, blessings on your continued work there. Very important, and I'd love to stay up to date on how that's going, because I think that's something that many of our schools could consider as a kind of a rock-solid approach, and there's lots of benefits to doing that. Thanks so much for joining us, Carl.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks again to Carl for spending the 10 or 15 minutes that it took to record that interview. He had just come out of a workshop, so he was very interested, I think, in sharing again to a wider audience what he shared with probably a smaller audience there at the teachers' conference. And looks like he's done his homework and found some good tools that are helpful, and very interesting that they're beginning to roll out Google Apps there at St. Mark. I'll be interested to follow up with him to see how that goes.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of cool stuff going on in our Wells schools, and
yeah. It's
wonderful to have these technology leaders who are willing to share, you know, the information, the things that they're learning, the trial and error that they go through can benefit all of us.
And those cool folks listen to this podcast.
Yeah, well, of course.
So if you know some other cool folks who aren't, you'll let them know, because we are very education-focused, and Sally keeps us on the track there, and we bring in Gail once in a while to help us do that as well. So good stuff, hopefully, that we try and share with you on a week-to-week basis. Ministry resources is the next section, Sally. What's going on out there that we'd like to maybe encourage our listeners to consider taking advantage of?
Well, last week we highlighted the fact that Logos Bible Study Software, which is used by many of our pastors and teachers in the Synod for in-depth Bible study, they released a new version last week, and that was just a really big announcement mm-hmm. from them. Logos 4 is out. Martin, I know you had just bought Logos 3.
Yes, so. A week before. So I sent him an email, and I sent him an email early last week, and I just got a reply today saying, they haven't gotten to my email yet because they're so swamped with all the influx from, I guess, questions and inquiries, support issues with Logos 4 that they're going to get to me as soon as they can. So must be very popular.
Yeah, my husband is a serious Logos user, and he was able to upgrade his software to Logos 4 for free, but the library needs to be upgraded, and that's a fee-based thing.
Mm.
So if you own a library, in order to take full advantage of all the Logos 4 bells and whistles that come along with the new version, you have to actually pay a fee to upgrade your library to be Logos 4 compatible. But what we found this week is there's also a Logos app for iPhone that was introduced at the same time. And you can get that for free. If you have an iPhone or iPod Touch, you can download the Logos app. Just search in the app store for Logos and it'll come up, and you'll have the Bible on your iPhone, similar to logos.bible.com, which we've talked about on other shows.
Bible.logos.com.
Sorry, got that back. Yeah.
So can you get the NIV on the phone, or is it?
I don't think you can get it, the NIV version.
Okay. That's usually the bugaboo, yeah.
Exactly. But I guess if it's in your library, then you can, because if you have Logos 4 on your desktop, then you can sync your iPod to your Logos 4 desktop. The catch is you need to have the Logos 4 library purchase, not just the software upgrade, but if you've actually upgraded your library as well, then they sync. And I think they're working through. I don't think you get all your books from your library yet, but they're working through adding books each day, so that eventually you'll be able to have, you know, a complete sync with what you're studying on your desktop to what you have on your iPod or your iPhone.
So do they update those libraries over the internet, or do they send you new disks?
I think they update them over the internet. That's okay. My understanding. And I did ask Pastor Aaron Fry, I sent him a tweet yesterday and asked, you know, are you using the iPod Touch app? Because I know he's a touch user.
Mm-hmm.
And he said he thinks it's pretty cool, and the syncing is working for him because he has the upgraded library as well. But he says there aren't enough books yet to do a good study on the iPod Touch.
Okay.
So it's going to take some time for them to get all the copyright permissions and things like that to convert the library to be readable on the Touch as well.
Gotcha. So you're still chained to your desktop or laptop.
Right.
Okay.
But it's nice to get used to the interface.
Oh, for sure. Yeah.
And begin to get the books over there. And you can use the Logos app whether you own the Logos software on your desktop or not. It's mm-hmm. just, you know, having your library is the real plus.
Oh, for sure. Absolutely. Yeah, I assume you have to have enough space on your iPod to manage that too, though.
That's true. So we'll see over time how, that kind of evolves as more and more people upgrade and more mm-hmm. of the books are available on the Touch platform.
Very good. All right. Shall we move on to picks of the week?
You bet. My pick this week is a screencast software, and I know there's a lot of these out there, but I was playing most recently with Screener. It's S-C-R-E-E-N-R, leaving out that last E.
Of course.
Screener. Got to have a cool name.
In true
name.
Web 2.0 fashion.
Yeah, screener.com. And it's really billed as kind of a Twitter application. It allows you to real quickly and easily make screencast video. There's no software to download. It's all web-based. So you go to screener.com and push a button, and you're recording your screen and the audio from your microphone on your computer. So
are you just recording your web screen, or do you do your whole desktop?
I think you can draw a box around whatever you
okay.
want to do. So you can do your whole desktop. And when you're done, then it gives you linkage to tweet your video. So very quickly and easily, you can record a screencast video and publish that on your Twitter account so that others can view that video.
Mm-hmm.
And I actually did one, just doing a quick rundown of the Wells Tech website, and I'll have a link in the show notes to my sample screener video. I thought it turned out really good, and it was really easy and quick to do.
Hmm.
So if you're looking for a screencast application, this may be one you want to try out. I know I've tweeted about it, and John Simonson, who's one of our listeners, immediately did a screencast video for his company. He does Webstream Dynamics, and he was able to quickly do that as well. So hopefully it'll be useful.
How does this compare to Jing?
Well, Jing is a download application.
Right.
And then once you create the video on your local computer, then you have to go through the upload process to get it onto the screencast.com website.
Mm-hmm.
This actually is all web-based. There's no download.
Right.
You do it, you instantly have your video. It's already on the web, so you can link to it as
okay.
needed.
Do you have a limit time limit?
I don't believe you do have a time limit.
Really?
I don't remember seeing that anywhere. So, you know, that's a good question. And I'm looking at their website. I don't see an about link to answer that. But I don't remember them publicizing a time limit anywhere.
Okay. Cool. I might have to try that.
Yeah. Pretty simple.
My pick of the week is a really handy little extension. We've talked about SkyDrive before, and that's Microsoft's cloud-based storage solution. It's free. And if you have a Windows Live account, which is also free, you can get your 25 gigabytes of space in the cloud that you can upload to. It had been semi-useful because the only way to really get at it would be through a web interface where you'd have to click an upload button and you had the limitations of the web in management of your files. But SkyDrive Explorer is a download that essentially gives an add-on to Windows Explorer and allows you to essentially work with your SkyDrive content just like you would local content. So what that means is that another folder appears, a SkyDrive Explorer folder appears in your Windows Explorer, and you can treat it just like any other drive on your computer, except that what happens is once you drag something into that SkyDrive folder, it uploads it to your Windows Live account. And your Windows Live account has both a public and a private side to it, so if there's something that you'd want to share with somebody, you could put it in the public folder. Otherwise, it's all behind your Windows Live ID account and works really well. There had been a tool previous to this called Gladinet, and it was a little bit buggy, a little bit hard to use, a little bit hard to set up. This is much better. It's a small download, and it seems to be nicely integrated with Explorer. One thing that you can't do is, I think, drag and drop within Explorer. You have to actually do that on the website itself. But the best part about it is you can drag from your My Documents or your desktop or whatever right into that window, and voila, you've got it. You know, probably a good way to back stuff up too. It's cloud-based, and it seems to work pretty well. You've got more space there than you have in some of these other services like MobileMe and a few others, and on top of that, it's free. So SkyDrive Explorer. I think it's skydriveexplorer.com.
Okay. I was just going to comment on the amount of space. With Git Dropbox, which is free, you only get two gig of space. So to go from 2 to 25 is a big jump. So that's worth looking into SkyDrive right there. But then, you know, the convenience of the Windows Explorer interface is really powerful.
Right. Yeah, the difference between it and like a Dropbox solution is that there's no longer a local copy. It doesn't sync anything. It's only in the cloud, so it's cloud-based. Totally.
Okay.
So give it a shot if that's something that might be of use to you and your ministry. Community feedback, Sally.
Well, we heard from lots of people this week. First up, via Twitter, we heard from Ryan Rosenthal, who's at Faith in Fond du Lac, Wisconsin, and he shared several interesting links and comments. He is using SpellingCity.com for his class, and I actually went and checked out this website as well. And as a teacher, you can set up an account and put your spelling list online, and they give you just millions of options to do all kinds of fun spelling quizzes and things with your students, lots of games and things that the students can play. When they have an account, they can log on at home and work on their spelling words and things like that.
That sounds so really cool. That's a great idea. Does it give
nice
pronunciation
research
and those kinds of things too?
You know, I didn't see any pronunciation, so I'll have to dig a little deeper and see if that's there, but I did not see that there.
Or using the word in a sentence, that kind of stuff, the typical stuff. That's very cool.
The next one Ryan shared, I'm just really excited about. I had a lot of fun with this and actually added it to our school website right away. And it's a visual display of classical music. And the link I want to share is to a bunch of YouTube videos that are examples. But if you like what you see, then you can actually get DVDs of this. If you're a music teacher, you can get them for free just by requesting them. But basically, it kind of draws out, somebody said it's almost like a player piano. It draws out visually all the different instruments in the classical piece, and you watch it scroll past as you're enjoying the music. The showcase one that they have on the main page of their website is Stars and Stripes Forever, and it's just amazing to watch it scroll past visually. And when it gets to the piccolo part, you see everything, you know, played out in front of you, including the trills and everything that the piccolo is playing. So just a really great resource for music teachers. I shared it with our music teacher at St. John's and added it to our website right away, and it's just a lot of fun.
Cool.
So if you got music inclination, you want to check out these links that Ryan provided.
Mm-hmm.
And finally, he shared with us a couple of different bibliography makers. I think we've talked about these a little bit in the past, Martin, but bibme.com, easybib.com, and autobib.com, O-T-T-O, bib.com, are all automatic bibliography makers where you just enter your information or even the ISBN number of the book, and it will generate bibliographies in different style formats. So if you're working with a group of students who need bibliographies, you might want to share those resources.
Very nice. Thanks, Ryan, for sharing those.
Yep. Next up, we heard from Jason Schmidt, who is always finding a lot of cool stuff for our listeners. And first off, he actually asked a question. He wondered how we actually do the audio setup of our Wells Tech podcast. Martin, I'm going to defer to you because you're our audio wizard here at Wells Tech.
Bailing wire and duct tape?
Wow.
That's right. Times are tough. So, no, we will. We should actually dedicate a show to, you know, how we do this and the equipment that we use. It's not overly complicated. So stay tuned for a later show, and that'll kind of be one of our topics. If you're interested in podcasting and some of the equipment we use, it's not rocket science, obviously, if I can do it. So I'm no audio expert, but I found my way through some of the technology, and we can give advice there. So great question and a good suggestion.
Very good. He also shared a link to screentoaster.com, which, believe it or not, is very much like my pick of the week, free online screen recorder.
Mm.
So a little competition for screener.com, which I just talked about. And so maybe you want to try both of them out and see which one you like best and give us some feedback. That would
sure.
be great. Jason stumbled across some free Mac software. It's an entire package that you can download through November 12th for free. It includes ShoveBoss, which is kind of like an Evernote where you can put all your different notes and links and things in there and organize them. It has Write Room, Twitterific, TinyGrab, which is screenshot sharing, and even a game, Hordes of Orcs, which is like a tower defense game. So all of those, priced normally between $15 and $25, are available for free download from Mac Heist.
Yep.
They're calling it their Nano Bundle. So if you're a Mac user and you manage to catch the podcast before November 12th, you might want to check out that link. Otherwise, after November 12th, that won't be available anymore.
Yep.
And then finally from Jason, he shared a link to Web 2.0 Literacy Tools Master List that someone compiled on their website. I didn't catch the lady's name. I think it's on here. Naomi Harm actually put this together. But it's a really extensive list of Web 2.0 tools that can be used in an education setting or in a ministry setting as well. She's got things organized by bookmarking tools, copyright-free photos, digital project tools, flash and presentation tools, and much, much more. Productivity, timeline creators, video programs, Web 2.0 repositories, just a really exhaustive list and very well organized. Obviously, Ms. Harm put some time into this, so you might want to check this out as well.
Very good. Thanks for sharing those, Jason.
Yep. Last from Twitter, we heard from our friend Gail Potratz, who is often on our Wells Tech podcast along with us, Martin. And she was just sharing some recommendations she has as she's using her iPod Touch more and more. She has found that Audio Boo is useful.
Mm-hmm.
She says you can use it for quick interviews and posting to the web. Is that something you've used, Martin?
No, I've seen it, and I've heard some audio files done from it, and it's actually pretty impressive. So And it works on your phone, so that's I think valuable to remember. I don't know if there's cost to that or not.
Yeah, I think it is free. And then when I visited their website, it said if you don't have a phone, you can actually dial a phone number. So for the cost of a phone call, you can make these recordings as well. So lots of options there.
Yep.
And then Gail is a fan of Dropbox. We talked about getdropbox.com. And what's nice about that is it does allow you to sync your files to your different platforms. So you can actually have your files on your iPod Touch or iPhone and be able to view them there as well. So
A Dropbox competitor that I've heard recently that's gaining a little bit of momentum is SugarSync. It's got the same limitations as far as the 2 gigabytes, but it works in a similar fashion, except one advantage is with Dropbox, you have to have your files in the Dropbox that it establishes for you. And so if you don't put your files in the Dropbox, they don't get synced. With SugarSync, you tell the program what folders you want to sync, so you can leave your stuff where it is. So if you've got a folder in your My Documents section, for instance, you could point SugarSync at it, and it would accomplish the same thing as Dropbox with that added advantage. So all kinds of tools, I think, are going to pop up. And obviously, there's upgrades, and that's their hope, SugarSync or Dropbox, that you would upgrade for more storage. And sometimes that makes sense. It makes sense for if you've got multiple computers, or it's a good backup routine if you want to make sure that you are both land-based and cloud-based with your content, because backups are important.
Right. And both of those offer 2 gig of storage for free.
Right.
So I'd be curious if SugarSync has an iPod app.
Great.
Check that out.
Question. Okay.
Yeah. All right. Gail also mentioned that she's looking for a Bluetooth microphone. So if anybody has recommendations, I think she wanted to use it with her laptop. If you have a Bluetooth microphone that you're happy with, we'd love to hear about that as well.
Yep.
And over on our DIGO site, we actually are compiling the DIGO links that are added with the Wells Tech tag. I picked up that Jason had tagged something that was a DIGO and education presentation. And it's actually a SlideShare file, which is one way of sharing presentations via the web. And I think there's like 99 slides here. It's very well done, very extensive, great introduction to DIGO for anyone who just really wants to learn more about the software and what you can do with it. It's kind of taken from an educator perspective. So it even tells you how to set up accounts for your students if you want to have students using the site, and just has loads and loads of resources related to DIGO. So if you want to learn more, this is a great place to start.
Great. And this just in, Sally, there is a SugarSync app for the iPhone.
Oh, pretty sweet. I'll have to try it out.
I just looked it up. It looks like it's pretty new, too. So looks pretty cool.
Good.
All right, and finally, we wanted to talk a little bit more about Google Wave. There is a Wave that both you and I, Sally, are participating in, as well as how many other users here. It never tells you how many total users, does it? 1, 2, 3, 4, about 20 is my guess, 20, 25, something like that, of all Wells users calling all Wells Techers.
Very
maybe catchy.
I should have thought of a better name.
That's what I'm thinking. Anyway, we're having a discussion over on The Wave about, in fact, I introduced the question, how can we use this for Bible study? And we've had some great responses so far. So if you have any ideas about, if you're a Wave user and have some ideas about maybe how we could use the technology here for Bible study, love to have you join the Wave. You can; it's open to the public, right, Sally? So anybody can do a search and join themselves.
That's right.
Okay.
Absolutely.
And if you need an invite, let us know. We have some invite. At least I have some invites left. I don't know if you have any left, Sally, but be happy to give you those and get you on Wave. And I'd love to kind of come up with a kind of an approach for maybe best practices for using Wave for Bible study. And I've been really happy with some of the responses so far, things that I would have never, you know, kind of thought of on my own, just different ways that we could use it to share God's Word with each other. There's already been, and I've enjoyed following that too, a Bible study on James. I don't know who started that, but and you get some of the, you get some of the curmudgeons that jump in there saying, you know, why are you guys studying the Bible? What a worthless piece of junk, kind of comments like that. So you got to wade through some of that garbage. But it's interesting to see how they tried to do a Bible study on a book of the Bible and some of the interaction that's available through polls and through editing and through some of the tools that are available within Wave. Very interesting study.
Yeah, I think we're all just kind of getting our feet wet at this point and mm-hmm. trying to figure things out, but already seeing some benefits to the interactivity, the replay ability.
Yeah.
So
mm-hmm.
I think somebody even suggested that maybe you do the whole Bible study thing and you do it at a set time or whatever and have you know, people on the Wave at the same time interacting, but then someone can come back and use the
replay
playback
it
button.
Right. Yeah.
And you know, pause, maybe a question is asked, maybe they can pause and contemplate the question before they play the next thing in the Wave to see what how the discussion went around that question,
and so. Even participate themselves at a later date.
Yep. Sure, absolutely.
Right in,
you
right
can
in
always
line.
Add to it. You can insert things right in the middle of the conversation. It's pretty, pretty slick
There's
stuff.
There's a lot of potential here, so we'll see how that goes. So if you need an invite, let us know. If you're on Wave, join that Calling All Wells Techers Wave. I think it's is it called a Wave or a Wavelet? I don't know what it's called.
I don't know.
The technology's still evolving. All right, now I got to go back and I got to find my map again here, Sally. Next week,
That's
we
right.
have we're going to start a new study of a book called "The Hidden Power of Electronic Culture: How Media Shapes Faith, the Gospel, and Church" by Shane Hipps. I read this book last summer. I recommended it to Sally and her husband to read, as well as a few other folks around here. I think there's just some excellent ideas that are or theories that are offered here that really are thought-provoking about how media and how technology in particular shapes church, and you know, things like using PowerPoints, you know, within a sermon, or video, or those kinds of things, and things that we might want to be thinking about before we jump into those kinds of uses in technology. So tune in next week as Sally and I will be going over Chapter 1. If you would like to follow along, I'm assuming we can find this on Amazon, right, Sally?
Yeah, I believe I can post a link to the book on Amazon. I think I have that available, and I think it'll be an interesting discussion. I'm guessing we should probably preface it and say, you know, we aren't always going to necessarily agree with everything that Mr. Hipps has to say, but I think it's very, very thought-provoking and a chance to examine some of these topics closer.
Yep, he is a Mennonite pastor, but had previous to that been really a technologist and somebody in media, so he's bringing all those together, and it's an interesting conversation. So if you'd like to join us, grab the book, and we can talk about it together. And we'll also have an interview with our Wells Director of Communications, Joel Hochmuth, as we recently launched the new Wells.net website, and he will be on talking about some of the new stuff that is on there now and some of the plans that we have for the future. So I'm looking forward to that, too.
Kudos to you and to Joel for pulling off that relaunch of the new website. That's very exciting stuff, and I know a huge undertaking for both of you.
Yeah, the major players, we should actually call them out by name because I had almost nothing to do with it. Joel Hochmuth, of course, and Alicia Newman were the main people on the communication services side. And then on the web side, Julie Duran, Alyssa Dunning, and Debbie Kameen all had a lot to do with making this thing a reality. So thanks very much to all those folks for the launch. We had some consultants in there, too, who did design and some of the back-end technology. But maybe we'll devote a show to talk about some of the technology behind the scenes, too, because it's kind of cool how we're using open source tools to make all this happen.
Happy to be on the downside of that mountain.
I know.
It was a big one.
It is. And we'll still work at it. But the hard part, I think, just getting it launched is a major effort. So let's close the show with the music of Michael Schrader, his song The Beatitudes from his album A Witness. Thanks, everybody, for joining us. We'll talk to you next week.
Persecuted the prophets who were before you.
I say, blessed are you. By faith you know the truth. Yes, you child of God. By faith you stand on the rock. Child, in the joy of every smile, in the friend that you greet.